Good morning. It has been a genuine pleasure for me to be standing in the pulpit the last few weeks. I've enjoyed kind of getting back in the saddle. My name is Grady Smith. I'm one of the ministers here at Northeast, but I am not the pulpit minister. That guy sitting right there is the pulpit guy, and he will be back in the saddle next week, and we look forward to hearing from Noah next week as he is working on the next series you're doing is called, what's it called? One Another. So he'll be looking at the one another relationships that we have. I've just been thrilled to talk about Jesus with you the last few weeks and what life in him and our faith in him and our call, the special, distinct, unique calling that we have to share such a wonderful, hopeful message. I believe that Jesus is unique and that Christianity is unique in a lot of different ways. And while you look at the core of Christianity and our belief and faith in Jesus and what that's all about, at its core, it's about the man, Jesus Christ, who we believe wasn't just a man. We believe, those of us who do believe, I know everybody doesn't believe, and that's part of what we've been talking about, is that he was special and unique. And I think one thing that makes Christianity unique is how our faith is wrapped up in him, in a person, a historical person who lived and walked this earth and who we believe was raised from the dead. I believe that faith in Christ, that Christianity provides answers that you don't find other places. And you compare the core of Christianity and our message and what the whole idea of salvation is all about. In contrast to a lot of the world religions today, to them it's about doing enough or working enough or finding enough or performing enough in order to earn whatever or however they may define salvation. Christianity is unique because we believe that we are saved by the grace of God in Jesus Christ. It's not about us working or earning or achieving our approval with God. It's about what he has done for us. And I believe it's a unique message. Now, I understand, as I've already talked about, this is one of the first slides I showed you a couple of weeks ago, and it's an important question. Because I know that everybody doesn't believe in Jesus. Everybody doesn't have faith in Christ. That there are people who doubt the message, there are people who downright are just skeptical, and there are some who violently oppose that message. But I contend that there is enough evidence to make a case that Jesus is the Son of God, that he is divine, that he was raised from the dead. I know historically that he existed. I know historically that he has made a profound impact upon this world, this planet. And I also know for a fact that there was an explosion of information to get that message out in the first century and later. And I believe that is due to the fact that the early disciples were convinced that Jesus indeed had been raised from the dead. And they were willing to stake their lives. They were willing to stake their security to do anything they could to get that message out, because they believed it was true. Now, you may say they were fooled or somebody stole the body of Jesus. Others have said things like, well, the disciples stole the body of Jesus and then said he was raised from the dead. But why would anybody do that and then die for what they knew was a lie? You may come to the conclusion that they were mistaken. But they certainly did believe that that was the case. And so a small band of disciples in the first century, viewed by many as just a little sect of Judaism, grew and developed and proclaimed a message that is still being preached and taught and lived in this world today. If you struggle with doubts, that's okay. Some great people of faith have struggled with doubts and uncertainties, and while I believe we can find facts that support our belief and our faith is not a blind faith. It's still faith, right? I wasn't there to witness the crucifixion of Jesus. I was not there to see the risen Christ. So if you're doubting, if you're struggling, I encourage you to dig, to search, to remember what's at stake if this whole story about Jesus is true. Because Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and I'm the life. And we've also been talking about what we sang about a minute ago in a song, Pass It On. How many of you remember singing that song from camp years ago? That's an old camp song. I've always loved it. It's kind of cliche, but there's a lot of truth in that. Because it only takes a spark to get a fire going. And so what role do I have? What role do you have in this whole idea? Now, I'm shifting the sermon here to those of us who are true believers in Jesus. And I want to talk specifically this morning, more than anything, about how I can be a witness for Christ and how you can be a witness for Jesus. Last week, we looked at the story of the woman at the well there in Samaria, and you remember the influence that Jesus had upon her. He reveals himself eventually that he is the Messiah. He knows things about her that he would not be expected to know. And Jesus says, after she is changing her viewpoint about who he is, and she's gone into town to say, this man may be the Messiah. In the context, the townspeople, we're told, were coming back to Jesus there at the well. And the disciples had come and said, you know, why are you even talking to this woman? And Jesus said, look what's happening right now. The fields are ripe for harvest. Right now, look. And I believe he's maybe pointing to the townspeople that are coming up to be taught, and eventually they are taught, and eventually they come to faith in Jesus. And as hard as the whole issue of reaching other people in this culture for Jesus and the challenges we face in that task, it's a great task. And I acknowledged a couple of weeks ago that we are living in an age and a culture that there is more unbelief, there is more skepticism, there is more hostility to Christianity. I'm not saying in all time, but certainly compared to 40 or 50 or even 25 years ago here in America. There are some people who, it's not just a matter of not believing, but you know, there's an anti-Christian sentiment that is more prominent today than it certainly was years ago. But I believe the fields are still ripe for the harvest. Right now, right here. In your life, I believe there are still people who are yearning and searching and seeking. There are people who are still asking the big questions in life. There are people who may say, I'm not a believer, but when they're lying on their bed at night, when things are quiet and all the activities of the day have slowed down, they're thinking about those things. And I believe we have a message to share. I believe the fields are still ripe for the harvest. And I also believe that we're going to do a better job of reaching others for Jesus if we seek to have the eyes of Jesus. And I talked about this last week. This is a little review. But our prayer should be that God would help us to look and view others through the eyes of Christ. And not just see them for what or who they are, but for what they can or who they can become. Saul of Tarsus became Paul the Apostle, and he was a murderer. And yet God could use him. God saw him in a different way. Jesus viewed this woman at the well in a different way. The disciples saw her as somebody who really wasn't worthy to even be spoken to. And they thought it, but they didn't say it. Why is he talking to her? But Jesus saw her differently. How do we view other people? How do you view other people? How many of you have maybe a neighbor who's not a great neighbor? They're obnoxious. They play their music loud. Their tree drops its leaves in your yard. You know, come up with whatever it is you want. Come on, raise your hand. Come on. One of you. Only one of you has a bad neighbor. Oh, no. Other hands are popping up. So how do you view them? When you think about them, you think, I just wish they'd move. Right? But when you're looking at them through the eyes of Jesus, you see them differently. How many of you have maybe somebody at work two cubicles down and they're just really, they're obnoxious. They're a real jerk. Hey, wait a minute. Okay. I'm going to tell Nick what y'all think about him. Where's Nick? Oh, there he is. So what do you think about that person at the office, right? And I know we like to say, I want them to be saved. I want them to come to know Jesus. And I think about that all the time, right? Is that... I want them to come to Jesus and know Jesus, but I also want them to be fired. Is that fair enough? Can I want both? And maybe that is okay. Maybe they need to be fired, but they still need Jesus. How do we view other people? And then last week, this once again is a little review, I talked about the team approach. You remember what is happening in the story. Jesus has been talking to her. She's convinced he's the Messiah. She goes into town. She's coming back. The people are coming back. Jesus says the fields are white unto harvest. There are people who are eager to be taught and to understand and to know. And then he says, you're going to enter into a reaping of this harvest. And you didn't have a whole lot to do with it. You're going to be able to share this message now that this woman has already done the work that you didn't even do, but you're going to, it's a team effort. And once again, I asked the question, I can't remember if it was last week or week before, when you answer the question, who led you to Jesus or how were you converted, most of us would say it's more than one person and not just the person who baptized us. It certainly was the case in my life. J.C. Davidson, the man who baptized me, he had an influence in me becoming a Christian. I heard him preach on several occasions, but it was the influence of family and friends, primarily friends at this point, who made that difference in my life to come to Christ. Danielle Wright, she's not here this morning. They're passing around a stomach bug at their home, but she was baptized several months ago. And then it was just a couple of months later that her daughter, Danielle, was also baptized into Christ. And frankly, if you were to ask me, what role did I play in her being baptized into Christ? It was just like, it was so little. We got an email from someone in Texas who had been corresponding with her in a Bible correspondence course. And they gave us the name and the number and asked us to follow up. But I'm going to tell you, quite frankly, most of the time we get a lead like that, or somebody says they're interested in being baptized, and you even when you follow up on it, a lot of times those contacts, those follow-ups don't pan out to very much. But we did that. We followed up. We met with her. Eventually she was baptized. What role did I play in that? Just very little. I met with her and I talked with her, but other people had done work. She had already had this spiritual hunger in her life that led her to this point. And so we need to keep this whole idea of a team approach in mind. And finally, before I get to some of the passages and points I want to make this morning, whatever we give, whatever we share, we want to give from the overflow. And once again, what I mean by that is I know, you know, you find out I'm going to do a series talking about evangelism and personal evangelism, and we get uptight because most of us are very uncomfortable with this topic. But what I am hoping all of us will just get a better grasp of this idea that whatever we share, we are sharing it because of who we are and what we've received. And we are like this woman who couldn't help herself. She couldn't help herself. She left her water jar. She ran to town. She was eager to tell people about Jesus. And so if what you get out of these few lessons I've shared is, I've got to be more evangelistic and I feel bad that I don't do more, and you know, then you really have missed the point. Because we do have something special to share, and we want it to, you know, because we're filled with His grace and His graciousness, then we want to share that with other people. But I know maybe still what some of you may be thinking. I still have a problem thinking of myself as a witness for Christ. Jesus said to the disciples who were gathered there in the book of Acts, He said, "You'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the earth." And most of us are willing to admit that evangelism, outreach, sharing Christ was not just something that the apostles did. It was a part of the DNA of the early church. When they're persecuted, they leave Jerusalem, they go to Samaria. We're told they went everywhere preaching the word, or sharing the word. I know what some of you may be thinking right now. Listen, I just don't have what it takes to be evangelistic. Or maybe this, that's not my gift, right? It's not my gift. And I understand that there are people who are gifted more in certain areas. Paul says, in talking about gifts to bless the church, he said that he gave some to be apostles, some to be pastors, some to be teachers, some to be evangelists, to build up the body of Christ. And you say, I'm not an evangelist. But from the standpoint of you having something, good news to share, I believe you are an evangelist. Because I believe we all have something to share. Now, here's where the rub comes. I think we have a hard time with this sometimes because I think when we think of evangelism, this is what we think of. Right? When I say evangelism, you think of the guy in the pulpit who's preaching. And maybe you think about people who knock on doors. And that makes you feel uncomfortable. You don't like it when people come to your house and they're invading your space. And I've been to some of your houses and I've seen some of those signs that say, "No soliciting, you know, don't knock on this door." How do you think they would feel if they came to your house and you had that sign up there? It's like maybe somewhere else, you know. But that isn't all evangelism is. Maybe you think that evangelism is when you sit down with others and you open the Bible and you conduct a Bible study and you say, "I'm just not ready for that. I'm not comfortable with that." And certainly a part of sharing the message of Jesus is that very thing. Eventually people need to understand who Jesus is and how we respond to him. But evangelism is much more than that as well. And maybe some of you old timers, I had to throw this one in. How many of you know who this is right here? Raise your hand. Okay. Noah, you're not an old timer, but that's Jewel Miller. And this was one of the main methods of evangelism that was used years ago. In fact, when I first came to Northeast, we had a projector and we had film strips and we had a little cassette tape that went along with that, and you would go along and you would flip the film strip and it would go beep, you know, and you would do that and it would teach them the gospel. And one thing, I always got a kick out of it, and I used it early on when I was here at Northeast a couple of times. Whenever they would do the voice of God, you know, his voice would be like, you know, like this. You know, the production was not great, but a lot of people were led to Christ through this method. But in thinking about us sharing the message, we need to think more in terms of this picture. This is how it's done. And I'm not saying it's the only way it's done, but a lot of what we do in reaching others for Christ is going to be involved more in a setting like this. And so what do we do with that? Let's look at a couple of passages. 1 Peter 3:15 says, "But in your hearts revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." Peter is not just talking to the experts. He's not just talking to the clergy or the evangelist or however you want to say that. He's talking to Christians in general. And he's talking to them in the context of facing pretty severe persecution that was taking place, most scholars believe, under Nero at that time. And Peter says to them, he says, you're going to be in situations where it's difficult and hard, and the whole context there is persecution. But he says, there is going to be a time when you have an opportunity to interact, to speak. And when you have that opportunity, when that opportunity comes to you, you need to be ready to share. Now, last week, I believe it was, when I was talking about a definition of evangelism, I said one definition of evangelism is us doing what we can to help others to see Jesus for who he really is, right? It's not about us, it's about him. And in the story of the Samaritan woman at the well and the townspeople, they finally came to the conclusion, hey, I believe in him, and it's not just what you said, I believe it for myself. But also another definition of evangelism, which I think is very applicable today in our discussion, is this. It is sharing what you know as God gives you the opportunity. It's helping people do our best to see Jesus in whatever way that is. And the second way is being willing to share what we know, not what we don't know, but what we know as God opens the door for us. He says basically the same thing in our reading this morning. A couple of quick hits here is that praying will make a difference. Pray that God opens the door for me. And so Paul believed that by what he prayed, that God would honor that prayer and open doors of opportunity for him. But also he believed that God would help him say what he needed to say in the clearest way and most understandable way possible. Pray that I might share it clearly. But then notice what he does here. He shifts it away from praying for me and what I do to share to those who are Christians at Colossae. And he says, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you might know how to respond to everyone or answer everyone. And so here's what we see here in this passage. Pray about it. And then live in a certain way so that God may open up a door of opportunity for you. And then when you finally have the opportunity to speak, when you speak, do it in this way, with grace, seasoned with salt. The words you speak should make people hungrier for Jesus. And when you do it in a way that it is more digestible, because salt helps everything taste better. It doesn't mean you change the language or the gospel or anything like that. But there are ways that we can share that can make a difference in how people are receptive to that message. And that's important to understand. So let me zip through some of these points here. Your life is living proof. Colossians, Peter is saying that by the way you live, you're going to open doors of opportunity for others to be the message, to share the message. And one way you do that is by how you live. Do people at work or do people at school, do they know that you're a believer in Christ? And if so, how do they know that or believe it? Peter says to women who have non-believing husbands in this very same chapter in 1 Peter says to them, he says, even if your husbands might not be won by you preaching to them, he says, by your behavior, you may win your husbands without speaking a word to them. But he's talking there about like sitting down and preaching to them. By the way you live, it's going to open doors. And your life is living proof. That leads me to this point. Let me encourage you to nurture your relationships. Because the vast majority of people who are led to Christ are going to be led to Christ by someone who is already a friend, a family member, somebody that they trust. I've met very few people through the years who initially came to Jesus because of something they heard on the television or on the radio. The one exception I know to this are the prices here this morning, Doug and Sue? Where are you? Oh, he's asleep on the back row back there. But usually it doesn't happen that way. They heard something on the radio or TV, I can't remember what it was, and that aroused their interest, and then they took steps to go to the church where the message was coming from. And so that goes to show you that that could be an effective way of evangelism, but in 90% of the cases, somebody who eventually hears the message is led to Jesus by somebody they already know and trust, right? A family member or a friend. And so you right now have built into your life people that you can be influential over in terms of leading them closer to Jesus. And you can do and say things with certain people that I certainly can't and don't have the opportunity to. I will say frankly that preaching publicly, while I do believe it can be effective in help reaching people for Christ, I believe that with all my heart, I also believe I'm limited. I believe Noah is limited when we step into this pulpit. Because we're not really having a conversation. We're just kind of preaching at you. In a sense, we're having a conversation. I like to feel like we're having a conversation when I'm up here preaching. But you can say things and be an influence in ways that I can't. You remember me telling the story to you about the family that was instrumental in leading me to Jesus. And it finally came to the point, and they invited me to church, and I would come some, but a lot of times I wasn't going, but they developed a great relationship with me. To the point that I think I've told you the story before. One Wednesday night, they asked me to go to church. I didn't go. I'm in the front yard. I have my pitching wedge and my golf balls, and I'm out there, you know, playing a little golf in the front yard. And they drive down the road, the windows roll down, and Mary Ballou, who was one of the daughters in the family, yelled out the window, "Heathen!" I'm not making that up. You know, she could have just as easily said pagan or infidel. Now, let me ask you, was I offended? I was not offended. And I'm not saying, oh, that's a great method to reach people. But I'm saying they had developed a relationship with me that they could say something like that, and it could convict me and touch me, and with a little humor, because I knew they loved me and cared for me. If J.C. Davidson had driven down my road, the preacher at the church, rolled down his window and yelled pagan at me, I would have taken it a lot differently. Nurture your relationships. Live openly, not boastfully. Notice what Peter says. He says, when you give an answer for the reason that you have hope, and once again, let's get this notion out of our heads that I have to be an expert on everything and I have to be able to answer any possible question that anybody could ever ask me about Jesus or the faith. That is simply not true. Do you truly believe in Jesus? Has he made a difference in your life? And can you answer the question why you have hope? It's not hard. Most of us can do that. And if you're having a conversation with somebody, you don't know the answer, it's okay to say, I don't know. I'll look into it. There's some things we may never know. But that's what makes faith so wonderful and dynamic, is that even sometimes questions aren't completely answered about everything, but there's still enough to have faith. We shouldn't come across as know-it-alls. We certainly don't need to be shoving things down people's throats. One author, Kevin Harney, in his book, Seismic Shifts, talks about a woman that he knows, a woman named Margaret, who had heard that it was good to give your dog castor oil, that it is good for their skin and their coat. And by the way, I did look that up, and it is good for their skin and coat if you give it in, you know, don't give them too much, all right? See, did you know you come and learn that about dogs and castor oil today? See, you can learn all kinds of things. But anyway, she would struggle with her Yorkshire Terrier getting that dog to take the castor oil, and she would chase him around, and she would finally get him down and take that teaspoon and shove the castor oil down the dog's throat, and it was a constant fight. He'd hide under the table a bit. Finally, one time she's trying to do it. He kicks sideways, knocks the castor oil on the kitchen floor, and she goes to get a towel to clean it up. She comes back, and he's there licking the castor oil. Turned out he liked it. But he just didn't like having someone shove it down his throat. And sometimes evangelism is that way. We don't want to be shoving things down people's throats. In your conversations with people, if I can give you a couple of quick tips here, a couple of quick takeaways, listen and pay attention to what other people are saying. Because the more we listen, the more we can pick up on cues, and then we can maybe ask questions that take things a little deeper and share things with them about what Jesus has meant in our life or how much Jesus and the church means to us. Don't forget, an invitation can change a life. Because I stand before you, and you know this already, those of you who know me, I am the product of an invitation. The family that loved me and cared for me and showed me a very functional home when I grew up in a very dysfunctional home, in displaying Jesus to me, eventually they invited me. And studies show that among our family and friends, if we invite somebody, most people, I think maybe 50%, will eventually come to some kind of invitation. And think of the vast array of resources we have in that regard. Do you ever think about sharing a Facebook link with somebody that you know? Or maybe there's a sermon that Noah preaches, and you think, man, I would love for so-and-so. Maybe share that link, that YouTube link to his sermon with somebody else. And a lot of times we can do that in ways that people are going to be positive in responding to that invitation. Be careful with your assumptions. Please don't make the mistake of thinking they're not interested or they'll never come around. They don't care what I'm saying. That I don't see them as being a person who has belief or faith. You know, whatever it is we say, we can prejudge people and decide ourselves whether they're worthy or not worthy, or whether we think they'd, you know what I'm saying? Be careful with your assumptions and how you think about others. Don't write people off. And be patient. Let God do his work. Because ultimately, the power's not in us. And it's taken me a long time for this to really sink into my heart. I think there have been times when I have put too much pressure on myself for whatever it is I might do. Because I think still sometimes the power is in me. Or the influence is in me. But ultimately it's not. The power is in Jesus. And Jesus living in me. And living through me. And sometimes it takes a while for people to come around. So don't give up. Pray about it. Focus on a few. Jim Kamen was one of our elders, was a great elder for many years. I don't know if Carolyn's viewing online today. She probably is. But I think of Jim Kamen and how he was led to Jesus. And he didn't become a Christian until he was 40 years old. You know, she just kept being a good wife. She didn't preach at him, but she lived Jesus in her life. Eventually, he came around, and she had a lot to do with that. Eventually, he not only became a believer, he became an elder and was a wonderful elder at this church. Give God room to do his work. Paul says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the what? The increase. We got to help people see Jesus. That's where the power is. And finally, see the kids over here, they're timing my sermon. Nick taught them to do that. Seize the moment. There are going to be times when God lays a softball in your lap. And there's this golden opportunity to do something, say something, share something that's going to point somebody closer to Jesus. Ask God to help you see those moments. And so I encourage you right now, before we close, to seize this moment. Where are you right now in your life, in your faith, in relationship to Jesus? You still want to explore, you want to dig, you want to look at it a little bit more, that is fine. Just be honest with yourself and honest with God. You may be ready to make a commitment to be baptized into him. And if that's the case, we want you to let us know. We can take care of it today. If you have a burden on your heart, one of our shepherds is going to be in a room. If you go out this door, turn to the left, first door on the left. One of our shepherds will be in that room to meet with you and pray with you, whatever you're struggling with. Whatever you need to do, seize the moment and take the next step. Let's stand and sing.